So today we're celebrating the faithfulness and the provision of God in building faith and building community and building this facility. And he's done that through pandemic, through social disruptions, through church online. Sorry, I just did not like that part of the process. Outside church was better, still not my favorite. Construction church in there was pretty good. You super church kids stomping above us kept it interesting. I'm glad you're not able to stomp above us anymore. And he's seen us through a lot of days of working at jobs, going to school, raising families, dealing with loss and celebration, showing up for church and for group and for one another through all that's happened these past few years. And today we pause to celebrate and give thanks because it's right and it's good to do. And we don't wait for the perfect moment to give thanks. The world is on the brink of a major conflict. And it could go either way. God only knows what's going to happen. And if this crisis subsides, it'll give way to another one. So we have to continually, in the midst of the troubles that are always going to make up this life, take a knee and give thanks. So take a knee. It's a good old sports idiom where when you're tired, the coaches say, take a knee. Brett, you ever tell a team, take a knee? Yep. And you take a knee to rest, take a knee to pay attention. It also is a great analogy for the church. We take a knee to worship and celebrate. So next week we're gonna pray for world leaders and for the nations. Today we're gonna focus our attention on what God has done on our little corner of the world, literally 21st and Oliver Corner, and how he's used and blessed your sacrificial giving of time and talent and treasure to build this facility. And we're done building a structure. If you as a church want to embark on another building project, I'm all for it, as long as I'm dead. So wait a few years. We're done building our facility, and now we get to use this facility to facilitate the greater things, faith and community. So let's spend a little bit of time in God's Word. Here's the backstory. We're going to go to Acts 17. Paul and his buddy Silas were on a road trip. They were visiting their friends in the empire in various places where they had planted churches, and they went to Turkey. They collected young Timothy to join them. We'll get back to Paul's letter to Timothy next week. But a road trip sounds fun, except this wasn't a fun road trip. They were, first town, they were stripped, beaten, flogged, thrown in prison, run out of town, went to another city, had to hide and escape by night as the mob tried to hunt them down. In yet another city, they were threatened by another mob. Paul was separated from Timothy and Titus. And so Paul went to Athens, Greece, to wait for his friends to join him. So clearly easy is not the biblical norm. Not easy is the biblical norm. So we tend to ask when things are not easy, what's wrong? What am I doing wrong? What's God not doing right? And the answer is, this is the norm. So for now, in the not easy norm of life, we're to be busy being faithful and living with purpose. And so Paul is hanging out in Athens waiting for his friends, and he's walking around the town, and he becomes distressed to see that the city is full of idols. And distress means that Paul's heart was breaking over the lives that are being destroyed by idols. And it's not just an intellectual outrage over something that's just not real or true, because these idols are not real. His distress comes from what he has personally seen idols do to actual human lives. And what happens when people try to worship what isn't real? And what happens is they're broken by the attempt to live in unreality. It's no different, really, to worship idols as it is to try to breathe water or to defy gravity. We're broken as humans when we do that. And we're broken spiritually when we worship anything other than God, but at least the physical, mental, and relational break down as well. So everyone worships. It's how our hearts are designed. And the agnostic or the atheist may cry foul and say, well, I don't worship, I don't even believe. But of course you believe. You may have faith in your own mind, you believe in you, but you believe. You live by faith, everyone does. And everyone worships. Everyone's heart is devoted to something, has wrapped itself around something at its core. Every heart has. So Paul was distressed because he has a heart for the glory of God. But the glory of God is not threatened by idols. It's the human soul that's threatened by them. And this hasn't changed. The worship of anything other than God is toxic for the human heart and ultimately fatal for the human soul. So what did he do? Well, he began to talk to people about reality, and reality is the gospel. And he talked to them in ways that related to who they were. He told them the truth about God, which is always the loving thing to do. It's not loving to allow people to continue to live and ultimately die in unreality. So you can tell people the loving truth in non-loving ways, but Paul didn't do that, and we don't do that either. So his message of truth was confusing to some of the town philosophers, some of the opinion leaders. If they took him to an ad hoc trial at a place called the Areopagus, this big outdoor pavilion, and Dr. Luke wrote in Acts 17 that all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there in Athens, they spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. And while the internet is a contemporary phenomenon, much of what happens there is quite ancient. People spend their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. And this by itself is not bad unless people never come to a conclusion about what's ultimately real and valuable and true. Chesterton said that merely having an open mind is nothing. The object of opening the mind, as of opening the mouth, is to shut it again on something solid. And so Paul's giving them some truth, something solid to close their minds around. He stood up at the meeting of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I see that in every way you're very religious, for as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' Now what you worship as something unknown, I'm going to proclaim to you." So some people say the ancient world was more tolerant of religious diversity, but that's not really true. Their tolerance had a fence around it, and you could wander around inside the fence perimeter, but if you got outside of that, you were not tolerated. And so it looked like toleration because it was diversity inside the perimeter. And they would persecute and kill those in Athens who tried to walk outside the fence line of their tolerated views. And the gospel got outside the fence line. And it's a lot like today. Tolerance is celebrated, but it does not extend to absolute claims that go against the prevailing narratives of our time. Tolerance is celebrated, but there's a fence line. If you get outside that fence line, you're not tolerated. But he found a point of connection with them, and they had an altar to an unknown God. And so for Paul, this was a crack in their worldview. It was an admission of ignorance. And they'd made up gods to explain their world. They even built houses for them to protect those gods. But they knew enough of their own limitations to commit an altar to one they knew they'd probably missed. And so Paul would proclaim, "You have in fact missed on all counts. These, what you think are gods are not, they're idols. And the unknown God, he's made himself known. He's the one true God. And he doesn't need you to build him houses. Everything comes from him. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. He doesn't live in temples built by hands. He's not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because from him comes, he gives all men life and breath and everything else." And so as he spoke of God not needing human structures, I could imagine Paul gesturing in the direction of the great temple to Athena, or maybe to the smaller temple of Nike, dedicated to the god of victory, not the god of tennis shoes, or just around that Mars hill dedicated to the god of war. And he says, "You don't understand. God doesn't need your help. You need his. He doesn't need you to house him or feed him." The psalmist said in Psalm 50, verse 12, "If God was hungry, do you really think he would tell you?" So the God who made the world and everything in it made all humans and every nation on earth spread throughout history. And he determined when we would live and where we would live. And some people say, well, I've heard red atheists saying, your God is a petty God because he's working to keep up with all this minutia of detail when there's bigger things to do. And they don't understand God. God doesn't have to do any work to know everything. Knowledge to God is always immediate and complete. We have to learn and grow and think. He knows everything that can be known instantly and completely. And he doesn't work hard to keep up with sparrows dropping or counting the hairs on every head. He just knows what can be known, and he does all that he's pleased to do. And he was pleased from one nation to make every one man to make every nation of man, that we would inhabit the whole earth. He determined the time set for us, the exact places where we would live. He did this so that we would reach out and find him. And so he was pleased to put you and me in this space, in this time. He doesn't need us, but he does want us. We do need him. We often don't want him. And so we're learning in community that we both need him, and we're learning to love him. We're learning to want him. And we're learning to take that love and that knowledge out into the world around us. Last week we looked at the essential importance of a heart set on faithfulness. And if we don't understand faithfulness at our core, then we're not going to live resilient, thriving, flourishing lives. And for us, at this time, faithfulness has been to build a facility on this corner to enable and to enhance life together in ministry in this time and place. So build faith, build community, build a facility, but for what end? Well, the end of everything is for God's glory and for human good, and those two things always go together. And I don't know if River or this building will be around when the Lord brings an end to time. I don't know if I'll be around. I do know I'll be around at the end of my time, whenever that comes. And many years ago, there was a group of people who dedicated a structure on this spot. First, it was a little building over there, and then they built another building, and then another building. And the people who originally dedicated the structure, they're all dead. They're gone. And then we took the bones of that building and rebuilt it into this one. And so these people who we don't even know, God does, gave away time and effort and money because of their own faith and their own desire to be faithful, and we've benefited from their sacrifice. And maybe in 50 or 70 years, if the Lord hasn't returned, there'll be a group of people standing on the spot saying something similar to this. I won't be in attendance on that day. And that's okay. In fact, it's more than okay to me, because I'm never discouraged by the temporary nature of this building, of my life, because I'm convinced of the eternal nature of the church, the body of Christ, and I'm convinced of the eternal impact on eternity that our efforts in time can have. Whatever we do unto the Lord, and it's never going to be in vain. And our lives, when they end, that will not be in vain. So we know that God doesn't need this building. We know that God doesn't need us. We do need Him. We don't serve Him because He has need. We serve Him because we have need, and it is our privilege to serve Him. It's our opportunity to serve Him. We've been invited by the Father to participate with Him, to do what He could do all by Himself if He wanted. Last week, one of my grandchildren, Ellis, was helping me work, and I don't get near as much done when he helps me as I do by myself, but I get something better done. I get time with him, and he also grows in our time together. So Ellis doesn't like bugs. And so I'm trying to help him learn to deal with bugs. He's a boy, and we're outside a lot. He even said, I don't like summer as much because there's bugs. I'm like, what? How can you be my grandson? This is crazy. Summer is the best time in the world. And so cardboard had blown around, and so we had a burn pile on Monday. And I said, hey, go get that piece of cardboard in the field and drag it over to the burn pile. And I was putting sticks on there. I looked up, and Ellis is standing there staring at the cardboard. I said, Ellis, bring it over. He said, got bugs on it. I said, bring it over here. And so I was working. I looked over. He's still standing there looking at it. I said, Ellis, bring it over here. And so he took a breath. He grabbed a corner of the cardboard. And they're ladybugs. You know, they're not wasps. And then he took off running as fast as he could. And it was great. He did it. The whole thing took a lot longer than it would have by myself. But he learned to have some courage, and I got time with him. That's called win-win. So God's not just trying to get stuff done. If He were, He would do it without us. He's better at everything than we are. He's after relationship with us, and He's after making us into mature sons and daughters, building faith and courage into us. And of course, the final building outcome matters to God. It matters to us. It's been done with excellence, and that's good. But it matters more to God that He's been honored in the way we've treated each other and how we've treated Him. So we live in space and time. We worship and live and work in spaces during our time. And this space is to facilitate life together and ministry to the wider world. And we really aren't enamored with it. We know what this space is and we know what it isn't. But we're grateful for it. And we're grateful for a space that matches who we are and helps us do what God's called us to do. The first week we opened, I was out there with a friend, and he had three kids, and we were chatting, and they were enjoying a snack, as kids do. Then they got up and left, and it was just like stuff everywhere. I mean, it's like three times as many crumbs as the original crackers. It had to be. I don't know how that is. It's like multiplying the breads and the fishes. And he looked at me and said, Terry, I'm sorry. I said, Mark, it's fine. This is not a museum. It's a place for us to live life together. And so there's a sense in which it's redundant to say we're dedicating this building, because like Rodney said, the money, the time, and the effort spent on it are parts of our lives, and we've already given our lives to Him. So because our lives are His, because we've given our lives to Him, everything we have is His. But the component parts of this building, the time, the talents, and treasure, have come together, and so today we get to say thanks for God bringing the sum together in this place. And I used to underestimate the power and importance of celebrating and commemorating milestones, markers. I used to tolerate weddings and tolerate funerals and tolerate all kinds of celebrations. And now I don't do that. I understand what's going on in those times of stepping aside and taking a knee. And it was foolish of me, because there's, at the appropriate time, we have to take a knee to rest, and we have to take a knee to remember and celebrate God. The Old Testament's full of that. The Old Testament's full of God saying, hey, Israel, you guys take a knee. And endurance and perspective is empowered by those times of taking a knee. So the New Testament's got plenty of them. I mean, weekly worship, the Lord's Supper, baptism, weddings. So I'm happy to celebrate this moment. It's an important part of the larger movement of God in our lives together. And we've called this project Build at River, Build Faith, Build Community. But we'll call this day Built at River. And I'm not assuming that God is done. But God has, in fact, built through his mercy. He has built faith. He has built community. And he's allowed us to build a facility. And so, though we're not done, we can take a knee and today, and we can say, thank you, God, Built at River. And so we pause to celebrate, because it's good and it's important to do. And then we take a knee, and then we get up, and we need to go move forward with faith and faithfulness. So worship team, come on up. Rodney's going to lead us. He's not going to lead us a song. We're going to listen to a song. This is a time just for us to reflect on some of what I've said, some of what God has done. And Rodney wrote this song this week for this morning, so in the first service, I didn't warn him, so he had time in between. But tell us what we should think about. Tell us what you were thinking about when you wrote this song, Rodney. And